actually.
Oh, did you?
Last night. Yeah, he kind of probably. Yeah.
Oh.
Receiving money from the Outdoor Heritage Fund in fiscal 2010 and the appropriation amount. The handout that Bill sent to you late last week and is in your packet today is a two-page, two-sided handout, indicates the 18 projects plus the Outdoor Conservation Partners Program. That's the spreadsheet we'll be talking about. Again, our primary goal is to adopt a spreadsheet that indicates which entities and how much. I'm hoping this will be a fairly brief meeting, but we'll wait to see. Members, we have an agenda then that has that. But prior to discussing the spreadsheet, we have some minutes to approve and a legislative update. Are there any additions, changes to the agenda as proposed? Any changes? Motion to approve the agenda as proposed. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We have an agenda. Minutes of the March 9th meeting are before you. Rick, you have a suggestion to change.
Yeah, there was a point in one of them where didn't have Representative Hansen left the meeting. And I think it's good to point out that that's to go to get excused from committee meetings.
Yeah.
So there's a reason given there rather than just that. I think that's on 3-8.
And if I recall, that was to the Cultural and Outdoor Heritage Committee. So we can clarify that further. Bill, you got that one?
Yes.
Okay, so members, that is on page 8. About 3/4 of the way down. The only other change that I found, and it's a very minor one, just on the last page, the sixth paragraph, which is a single sentence from the bottom, where it says the LOHC members thank Bill Becker for his great work as acting executive. Insert the word director at the end. Are there any other proposed changes to the meeting minutes of March 9th? Okay. We have a motion to adopt the meeting minutes. Okay, we have a motion. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Legislative update. I'm not sure if there's any news. Rick, I refer to you, please. And to Senator Abrams.
At 10 o'clock today, the House File 18 is up in Ways and Means Committee in Room 200. Some of it may be done at that by that time. But I think it gives a good indication of just time, of how time moves. So we moved that past it out of the Finance Committee last Monday. Mm-hmm. And that action didn't get moved as a motion until the floor on Thursday. So today was the first day that that was brought up. So we put it on just the process involved with moving legislation.
And what, again, Rick, what we're room 200. Okay. Is there anything else?
Bill? I have another one.
Sure. Okay. Two other legislative members in the hearing. Okay. Well, if we hear anything, I guess you can be advised as that information becomes available. Members, the item number five on the agenda, recall that at our meeting a week ago, we had spent the entire day going through allocations. We had finished the day making some allocations for the fiscal year 2010 recommendations to the legislature. We decided to hold off on adopting a spreadsheet until we received additional information about the projects, the location, the matrix we talked about in the areas of protect, enhance, restore across the, I guess, the vertical column, and then prairies, forests, wetlands, fish, game, wildlife habitat. So in other words, to get additional information to council members about these projects. That put in place a process where Bill contacted the program managers for the 19 different project areas, and it requested a considerable amount of information from them. Bill has compiled that information, and I just want to say again, to carry on our statement last meeting, at the end of last meeting, that Bill just did an outstanding job pulling this information together in such a short period of time. And I'm asking Bill if he would take a few minutes now just to walk council members through the information that he has been able to compile based on the responses from the program managers. Bill?
Thank you, Mike. Let me start by thanking the program managers who took the time very quickly in about a 24-hour turnaround to complete this particular document, which the accomplishment plans for each of the proposed recommendations. This is the source of data for the tables that we'll go through in a minute. I'd also like to thank our volunteer intern, Ben Bagman, who helped tremendously in pulling this together. I think there are a few overall comments about the information here that need to be made. It's not precise or exact. There's a lot of scrubbing that needs to take place in these documents to get this document to be exactly right. So, for example, you'll see that if we go to the first page of the tables, the composite budget is $68,918,000. That's more than what we allocated. So there's someone who's put a little extra in their budget. Maybe it's some match or something like that. And in the time given, we just weren't able to pull that kind of thing out. So let me start with the first table titled the LaSard Outdoor Heritage Council Composite Budget. In the accomplishment plans, each individual had to describe how they were going to spend the money recommended to them over the next three fiscal years. Just remember, we gave them three fiscal years in order to ensure at least one full summer season for the restoration and enhancement projects. So that takes us through fiscal year 12. And you can see by the total line at the bottom of the table on the first page that the majority of the money is being spent in fiscal year 10, with about a sixth of it in fiscal year 11, and then a minor amount in fiscal year 12. The largest amount is for easement acquisition, followed by fee acquisition, and then contracts, which are largely reflective of restoration and enhancement. If you turn to the next page, there are two tables. This is the outcomes we anticipate. I want to remind everybody that we are about outcomes. We're about outcomes in terms of habitat protection, enhancement, and restoration. And you can see by looking at the marginal total down the right-hand column that if we were to recommend and if it were passed, this package would protect 210,000 acres in Minnesota. the vast majority of those, $201,000, through permanent easement. Enhancement would enhance 11,000 acres and restore 10,500 acres. Some of the outcomes were expressed in non-acres quantities, and I didn't have the time to convert the miles to acres or the lakes to acres. But you'll see at the bottom that there are 342 shoreline miles that are anticipated to be worked on, most of that in the protection column, and 12 lakes, most in the enhancement and restoration. Moving on to the next page, this is once again allocating the dollars on the top, in the top table, allocating the dollars into our allocation matrix, which is wetlands, prairies, forests, habitats for fish, game, and wildlife, and how much we're spending to restore, protect, or enhance. The majority of the money is being spent on protection, with most of that protection of prairies. The non-state leveraged funds, I mean, this is another area where I think we need to scour the data. I noticed a bit of state funding that was in the non-state column. And the traditional way these dollars, match dollars, are treated is that state money doesn't match state money. Federal money can match state money, private money can match state money, local money can match state money, but state money can't match state money. So this $35 million that's in the lower right-hand total column is one that one might want to take a little time to look at in the accomplishment plans. The next set of tables gets at the acquisition data and the cost of acquisition. The top table is the amount of land in acres that's being acquired in fee. With state tilt liability is the first row. So in wetlands, we're acquiring 310 acres that will create state tilt because we're acquiring it in fee, and it's in a WMA or a similar unit. Acquired in fee without state tilt liability, 550 wetland acres. And then permanent wetland easement acres, 61,880. The large number of wetland acres eased is due to taking from the 187,000-acre UPM permanent easement, the 60,000 project manager identified as wetland acres within that 187. So you'll see 60,000 acres in the wetlands permanent easement column cell, and then you'll see the 127,000 remainder, 127,277 in the forest permanent easement, just so that you understand what's going on there. The acquisition data was taken out of the accomplishment plans. You can see again that most of the acquisition dollars are in permanent easements, with 33,192 is reflected in the total column under permanent easements, the right-hand column. The next table calculates the average for each of the internal white cells in the acquisition data table. And the high is an acquisition price in the forest area for fee without state tilt liability of $5,667 an acre. The above the average cost table is a calculation of the tilt costs per year, assuming that the fee that we have to pay is 0.75% per year. There are alternatives in the statutes, but this is generally the approach that's used by the Department of Natural Resources to estimate tilt payments. The next table is one I'd like to thank Mr. Bagdon for especially. These are the counties impacted by whether they're impacted from prairie protection, wetland protection, forest protection, enhancement, fish and game. You can see how that's laid out. There's a next page is provided by Mr. Baker, which indicates which of the counties and what in the seven county metropolitan area have projects in them, simply because that's been an issue that we've heard. And then the last page is a map prepared by Mr. Bagman that shows the distribution. And I believe this is of the projects that are likely to take place. As you may recall, in the accomplishment plan, for example, the wildlife management area had a list of maybe 60 potential acquisitions. But yes, this plot should only show the ones that were on the map provided by the wildlife management area. So we didn't put the full list on. And Mr. Bagman is shaking his head, yes, like I'm right. So that's about right.
Great. Thank you, Bill. Time for questions regarding the data. Again, I want to thank you and Mr. Bagley for all the hard work late last week, as well as the project managers to pull this information together for us. It's very much appreciated. Time for questions.
Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning. On the map and the dots on the map, I think as I went through it more carefully, I guess I wanted to be clear that a lot of those dots are potential, and we're not exactly sure where it'll end up. I mean, for example, in the WMA acquisition, I went through that and there were 40 different sites, 40 different proposed WMA acquisition sites, and so they're not all going to be done. So it's sort of a hypothetical, maybe things that are being looked at. So I just want to be clear about that. We're not necessarily going to do projects on any one of those dots.
Thanks, Mike. Bill, on the pill cost, the 134,890 was a 1-year cost, not yes. Ongoing. The cost for that would be an ongoing cost as well, right?
Every year in perpetuity, as long as the statute reaches it goes to go.
And then, did you have, I know the federal government gave us some pill numbers, and was there any calculation on the federal bills that they're coming up?
I did not calculate it. I can do that for you. I think the important thing about that is that it's 0.75%. Also, that the appropriation is in approximately 41% of the total bill. So there's a bit of an unknown when it comes to federal payments. In the,
on that question of the PILT, which is, I guess these aren't numbers, but the table on the upper, the part in the upper right of the table, it's an acquisition data value in acres. Does that PILT calculation include the acquisition cost, for example, the legal fees, the filing fees, the fees that were also the full-time equivalents that were budgeted in, or is that simply the raw estimated market value of the acquisition?
I suspect it does, and that's an example of the kind of data scrubbing that has to be done in the accomplishment plan.
Okay.
We tried to give them instructions that were precise, but they weren't precise enough.
Sure. No, very much understood. Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bill, help me with this map. Now, I understand this clearly. This does not include, obviously, any small grant.
No.
That we dealt with yet, so I just wanted.
No small grants are included in the map.
And just on that point, no WRP Bowser, because we don't know where the sign would be for those, and the Grand Plan restoration project. Yes, no?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, back to the PILT. I think we should have a conversation at some point about whether we think the council should absorb that cost into our budget. Just because it's going to be frowned upon as putting a tail into a state budget that can't afford it from the fund that has all the money. I'm just giving you an idea of what the perception may be to people. And so, you know, the governor's budget currently this year already proposes cuts to PILT because it's an ongoing obligation that's in the millions of dollars. And this is just our 1 year's worth of recommendation. So I think we need to think about that. It could... you know, if we agree with the premise of PILT that it supports the setting aside tax exempt land, but it also supports the political decision in a county to support more publicly owned land. And so if we want to continue to have that kind of support, we may want to take responsibility for this.
John, if Bob, your answer is right, it's not something that we haven't talked about, or at least mentioned before. And I would suggest that I think probably the threshold issue for us is whether or not pill payments are constitutional. I don't know the answer to that question. Do they meet the constitutional uses of the fund for protection, restoration, and enhancement of prairie wetlands forests? And why would have that? And I would ask that if we could make, have some determination as to whether or not they're constitutional, and then that would determine whether or not how much discussion we're going to have on that point. But I think that's a
Well, Mr. Chair, Bob, you raise a good point, and I guess I don't know the answer to that for sure, but I would say that if we count legal fees and drafting contracts and personnel costs and acquiring land, this would be another cost that would go along with acquiring land by law.
Yeah, and that's so, the argument that's square, and I think we would just be better served by having an answer to that question. Okay. And then leave it to the point, Senator Henson's point is someone mentioned to me the other day that we consider adopting some range of tools that would enhance the ability of council to do that kind of focus. If we were to figure out a tool, if bill payments are constitutional, turning some tool that allows us to engage in acquisition activities that address the bill.
So to move that discussion further, Bill or Greg or Janelle, or any legislative members, what can we do to get clarity about the ability to use the Outdoor Heritage Fund, given the constitutional mission of that fund, for activities like this? Because I certainly agree with both all comments that we need to get clarity about. Is that something that we should consider, can consider, as a legitimate use of this fund? Rick?
That question's been asked at a number of committees already, so I think that's being looked at. There's the constitutional test, but also I think when you look at Minnesotans, I think it would be hard to find one Minnesotan who voted for the amendment thinking that they were going to be paying for pill payments to the counties that restore or enhance. But is it the question then constitutionally and with the public is that inherent in providing for the protection of the enhancement and restoration? But that's been discussed in other committees. I think it would be looked at. And we'll probably get an answer on that. I think there will be bills that are going to be introduced on the question of bill. And obviously with the governor's budget and the legislature's budget, you're going to see some proposals, but there are significant cuts, at least in the preliminary budget, to bill.
I'd like to ask Senator Anderson, has the LCMR paid bill payments on their acquisition?
Mr. Chair, no, that's a good point. They never have. It hasn't really come up because I guess it hasn't been as large of acquisitions and acreages as we're proposing, but it's the same principle.
Mr. Chair,
yeah, Bob.
I consider answering it for the legislature line. We have a bond for WMA, so same land and so forth. What is the traditional approach?
Well, Mr. Chair, Bob, I think you know that, I mean, bonds are paid for, they're financed through the regular state budget as opposed to this being a separate fund. So, they're, you know, that's part of the budget consequences of a bond.
I'm sorry, my question is, if we use bond proceeds to buy land, is it still how obligation is the obligation with that? How is the legislature addressing those particular proceeds? For example, when we buy WMA, regardless of the source.
Well, Mr. Chair, anytime we've used state appropriations, whether they're general fund appropriations or through bonding, it's just become a budget obligation of the state. And so we could certainly proceed on that same assumption here, but I'm just referring to the perception problem we might have with this fund having spending a lot of money without taking care of the obligation to the taxpayers at large. I mean, the taxpayers are paying for both funds, but it could mean budget cuts, frankly, in a time like this. It could mean, you know, the pill
budget is in my part of the budget. It's the DNR, the PCA, Bowser, energy programs, and if we add PILT requirements, we're going to have to cut something else out of that budget. Just so it's Chair, it's really just a perception issue, I would say.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, sorry, that point. Certainly not that we would necessarily do this, but our recommendations include a $7.7 million reserve account established. So we're not spending all of the dollars that will be collected. And one possible tool, depending on the economy, which is anyone's guess, might be that we could, assuming it's constitutional, establish an approach that is trust fund. Use a portion of it. Interest payments, or interest earned on the reserve, which will be more than enough, more than $100,000 in 7 years.
I think Bob brings up a couple of solutions there. The issue is that right now, yes, when we've been bonding or when we've been purchasing by B title, we've been adding to the obligation. And the fact is we've hit the wall. I mean, we're in a $4.67 million shortfall. And so that's where any additional obligation is going to be challenging. You know, we reduce the other obligations that are there. Treat these differently, if you set up a fund, I mean, those are all going to be challenges that are involved with that. That and in the future, we have 25 years of more acquisition, how do we handle this? So I think the question is on constitutionality and if we can have a fund. But I think, again, we have to look at that question. I don't think anybody really looked at the bill in terms of the mayor. Yes.
Yep. Mr. Chair, maybe we can just move forward by having Greg help us put together a letter and inquire so we can put this in once and forever with regards to having a choice, give us some solutions. Who would we send that to? Would we send it to the Attorney General's office for a ruling on this? Or that's in my heart. It's going to probably be time consuming in order to get that letter back, but as soon as we can get it back, we'll get some decisions made.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Peterson, the Attorney General would probably be the likely person to give you an opinion on whether this would be constitutional. There are some other issues that you have to deal with, though, too. Is this fund, or this money only comes in for 25 years, and what do you do beyond the 25th year? Is the general fund make up the cost at that point in time? It would be unique to have TILT come out of another fund at this point. Right now, it's a general fund open appropriation. In other words, it's just estimated. It's whatever the amount of land in the state. It's an estimate. It's not an actual appropriation for the general fund for that purpose. I suppose one of the ways you could do it is by having a deposit from another fund into a transfer to the general fund. But it would be unique. I mean, some other areas where land is acquired. You know, the Game and Fish Fund is used for acquisition of land. Especially the small game surcharge for wildlife management areas. And those funds have never been used to pay the PILT payments. It's always been I shouldn't say that. There have been WMA lands. There has been some. The Game and Fish Fund was used originally at one point. It was half and half, general fund, Game and Fish Fund. So I guess there is a precedent there. I just remembered many years ago. But that's kind of the issue, is whether or not it's sustainable, and then also how the money will be used.
I just think we ought to get the answer to this, but the question of PILT is no different than the question of stewardship for easements and enforcement for easements. And I think it makes sense for us long term to have a strategy to not do easements where we don't have adequate long-term funds for the monitoring enforcement. I've been concerned for some time with Bowser and DNR who take additional easements that put burdens on their existing staff to go out and monitor them. And I think we ought to look at the long-term implications of all types of acquisition, whether they're fees or easements.
I just wanted to follow up with all respect to Mr. Knopf. He is a very good staff person and has a lot of legislative history, but he's not counsel. So if we're going to be doing a legal opinion or getting counsel, I think we need to deal with the House or Senate Council. Greg has a great deal of experience for us that helps.
Good. Yes, I agree. But I don't think we can proceed with just the idea of other legislators doing research for us. We're a group of very organized. We should be up front and forward with this and get a letter out and try to get something back and give us some options.
And I think that's a great idea, and I think Bill's taking notes on what the dimensions of that letter would be to get back to. Are there any other comments or questions on the data?
Mr. Chair, I would just say that I think it's remarkable. It's a 2-1 match. If you take all the votes,
Mr. Chair, I moved about the package of projects that we essentially tentatively established at least in our last meeting, and would like to speak to you.
Darby Nelson moves that the worksheet that we tentatively had adopted a week ago be recommended for adoption by this council. Discussion on that motion.
I've done a lot of thinking and a lot of research and a lot of soul searching, I guess, in this whole thing. In my judgment, this is absolutely an excellent package of projects, and I think most folks that I've talked to fully agree with that. The project, it's important that people know that the projects strictly follow the guidelines of the amendment as well as the statutes, and certainly the statewide conservation and preservation plan, which I once again looked at last night. I expect that absolutely everybody on the council has a list of projects that they would like to have seen funded, but we're not. I know I do. I've got a bunch of projects that I wish it could have gotten in, and they did not. And I think that is really obviously unavoidable when we face better than $250 million worth of requests, and we have only $69 million to match. We were presented, by my count, 99 projects. We proposed to fund only 19. That means 80 projects simply were turned away. And the important thing is that they were denied through no fault of the folks who proposed it, through no fault of the design and so forth. It's just simply a lack of adequate money. And it's absolutely true that many excellent projects that deserve funding in the Northeast, in the Northwest, in the North Central, in the Southeast, the Southwest, the Central, the metropolitan areas, unfortunately did not make the cut. But this is a 25-year effort. It's not a one-year effort. There is a next year, and there is a year after that. Some feel the metro has been snubbed, and I shared that concern before we had concluded our final work. And I realized after doing some due diligence that perhaps I should have done a little bit earlier, that is really not a fair characterization. Based on the data that I gathered personally, spending a day talking to folks, and certainly what Bill has put together in our intern, it just seems that it's just not a reasonable claim that a particular area has been snubbed. And I think those data on counties, it is very clear. There remain certainly excellent project sites in the greater metropolitan area, and they're due, as they do all over Minnesota. That's not a unique feature. Just a couple more comments. Yes, I totally agree. The metro does have habitat-worthy of projects. That's not an issue. Yes, there are more quality projects in the metro that should have been funded, and the very same thing is true of most other areas of the state. And clearly, the most important project, I think, to a lot of us, a project that sucked up almost one-third of our funds, clearly reduces the amount of leeway that we've got for projects everywhere across the state. And clearly, that big one, the Blandon forest area, on a cost per acre basis, is certainly perhaps the cheapest of the things that we're doing. Those per acre easement costs are a really good deal.
Thank you, Debbie. Other further comments? Ellen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, I guess it's time for me to make... I got several comments to make. This has been sort of turned into a statewide discussion as we've been... the media has been engaged in this discussion around the state, and it's been very interesting. And I'm glad a lot of people are really paying attention to what we're doing. Let me just say, in terms of the balance issue, just to be really clear, and I said this many times, but I'll just say it again, that I support good science-based conservation projects all around the state where the science justifies it. And a lot, some people say this is just an outstate fund, and I think they're wrong, and I don't think that reflects the will of the voters, and I don't think that reflects sound science. This is a fund that should be based on good conservation projects. And I did look at the map that Bill sent out, a list of all the projects that had some connection to the seven county metropolitan area, and he listed all of those. And I went down, I dug deeper into those projects and analyzed, you know, I was hoping to find that it was more than I thought that was in the metropolitan area. But what I found is that if you take, if you figure, I did, you know, just a mathematical analysis of each one. For example, the WMA acquisition listed 40 proposed WMAs, and three of those were from the seven county metro area. And so I put a percent on, based on that percentage, and added up the amount of the funds that would go to the seven county area based on that. And those are all based on potential decisions that are made. So we don't know, but it was 7.6%. So it's not a very big number. And as I've said before, I expect some legislators and some citizens are going to react negatively to that and feel that there is some bias against the metro in this package. So I do have that concern. But I really want to emphasize that I don't want this to be about geography, and I don't think my goal is to make this about geography. It's about the whole state, and if we're going to succeed, we need to focus on the whole state and not exclude any part of the state in our discussions. I don't think wildlife cares what city they're in, or town, or township. You know, I keep thinking about the Mississippi River, and I've said this before too, that it's the Mississippi River is one of the major, most important migratory bird flyways in North America. And so think about if you're an eagle down in Wabasha or Lake Pepin, and you want to fly up to your home for the summer in Lake Itasca by the headwaters, are you going to go through Minneapolis and St. Paul, or are you going to go around the 694 loop? I don't think so. I think you're going to fly up the river. And doesn't it make sense that if we want those birds to show up north every year, that we got to make sure we have some trees along the river so that they can stop and take a rest and make it all the way up there? I mean, we have to remember we're all connected. That's what this is about. And we can't, if we ignore parts of the state, we do it at peril to our wildlife. It's not going to support our wildlife. It's not going to support good conservation. We need to have those connections so that we have habitat corridors that really allow wildlife, fish, and game to move around the state. And so we have to protect those opportunities everywhere. I had a great conversation over the weekend with a gentleman from Columbus, which is near Forest Lake. He called me to talk about one of the projects that was not recommended. It's a Rice Creek acquisition project, and I forget what county it's in. But he was describing it. First he said he agreed with me. This is about, it's not about us versus them. It's about the whole state. He said he described this piece of land he was hoping we could acquire. He said it was about 300 acres. It looked like wilderness. It's open now to hunting, fishing, canoeing and bird watching, but he's worried that it'll be bought up and won't be available for public access in the future. And I promised him, well, if we don't fund it this year, I made a promise, which I'm committing all of you to, that we're going to go visit that place before next year. I want to go see it, and I want everyone to go look at it, to see that there's places that look like wilderness that aren't too far from right here. And he told me, Howard Anderson, this gentleman who's on the Planning Commission in Columbus, said, well, he grew up in St. Paul, and judging by his voice, I've never met him, but judging by his voice, I'm guessing this was a number of decades ago when he grew up. I'm guessing 50s, 60s, something like that. He said, when he learned to hunt at age 17, he was really lucky there were places he could go near his home because he couldn't afford to go up north to hunt. And if we forget people like that, again, we do it at our peril. That's my constituents. That's some of my constituents go up north and some of them don't. And they all have a right to have habitat protected near where they live. So I feel very strongly about that. Finally, I want to say that I think I'm going to vote for the package today. And I do that with some misgivings, as I've kind of stated why. But I think there's a lot of good things in here. And I really support a lot of what's in here. I just am concerned about what's not in here. And I do believe that we're all here working with the best intentions, and that as we move forward and create a strategic plan that's based on the ecological needs of each section of the state, maybe we can move beyond this geographic issue. I hope so. I'm really hopeful that we'll move beyond it. But it concerns me when I hear people say some parts of the state don't matter. So I'm going to vote yes. I want to say we've heard a lot about, just a couple more points quickly. Some people have suggested that we can adjust some of the other funds to make up for the lack of metro balance. And I just want to say for the record that I think that would be really difficult. I've had some conversations with my colleagues about this. We have yet to determine what the overall balance of all the legacy funds are going to be. But I think it would be problematic to say, oh, we're going to have the arts in St. Paul and we're going to have habitat in Brainerd. You know, I just don't think that would be good for Minnesota. And I don't think that's what the voters want. I think these are values that people across the state cherish, and we need to protect them across the state. And so I'm gonna vote yes, but I've made it clear before that I think there may be some legislative concerns about this package. So I'll stop there.
Sure. Yeah, Senator Anderson, I have a question. I saw you in Almanac on Friday, and you made the statement that there was no projects funded in the metro area. Is that a truthful statement? Do you believe that?
Mr. Chair and Jim, no, of course there are some. And what I've been referring to is what really kind of shocked me was when we got the votes in. And the votes came in, and none of the projects that originated in the metro area or that covered metro area projects, not one of them was recommended. That's what I kind of took me aback, and that's when I wrote this op-ed, and that's when I started talking about my concern about lack of balance. There are some projects that may be funded. There's some that for sure will be in the metro, a small amount, like a trout stream in Dakota County. And then there's some others potentially, depending.
Lake Rebecca.
And the ones that we'll see, remember.
Another county, which is one.
Right, and we came back with our first round of votes without Lake Rebecca, without Anoka County, and I appreciate that the council was persuaded to include those, but it concerned me that the impression I got from the votes was that those were not, well, they just weren't ranked highly by the vast majority of the council. The vast majority of the council didn't vote for any of those projects. And they did later, and I appreciate that. So I think we're making some progress. But when I hear people, you know, on Almanac, you also heard Gary say, this fund is for outstate. And so it concerns me when people say that we're going to ignore the metro, and that's okay. We're not ignoring the metro. but we're minimizing its importance in this package, I would say.
I'd just like to make a comment. Mr. Anderson's in the attendance here today. I don't know, maybe he wanted to make a statement.
Mr. Anderson, how
are you? Mr. Anderson,
you're
certainly welcome to.
I appreciate everything that Senator Anderson said, and she pretty well said it all for me. And I'd like to reserve any comments I make until later, see if there would be a possibility of the inclusion of the land that we're referring to, which is the Rice Creek land in Columbus. It's in Columbus, by the way. So I reserve my statement. The only statement I'd like to make in support of Senator Anderson is that young people need a place to hunt. And young people don't have the means of going to northern Minnesota to hunt. They're like I was, as you referred to, Senator. When I was younger, I hunted in the metro area. But there, if any of you have tried to hunt in the metro area, you know there are very few opportunities, especially for young people. And that's one of the reasons why I think a little more money could be designated for metro areas. So,
I'll be sure the rest of
it.
And just for the record, could you state your full name?
Oh, yes. My name is Howard Anderson, and I live in the new city of Columbus, which many of you probably say, where the heck is Columbus? And Columbus is on the west side of the freeway 35 from Forest Lake. And we're kind of proud of the fact that we just incorporated, so we're the new city of Columbus.
Thank you very much, and we certainly hope to take you up on the offer to visit your property sometime between now and our next recommendation, which is the end of this year.
That's the one thing that troubled me, is that I don't believe anyone from the council saw this land before. It's 300 acres of land, and no one saw it in making your decision. It would have, I think, been well worth your time to come out there and see it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, and Mr. Anderson and I did talk about that fact that we've had a really short timeline. We haven't had a chance to go out and look, so we'll make sure we get there. And I just, Mr. Chair, also need to say for the record, I'm not related to Howard Anderson or Anderson. As far as I know.
And I might add for the record that I'm not related to Senator Anderson, although it might be a nice thing.
Oh, yeah.
You going to top that, Dave?
No, I won't.
I just want to say I too have thought a lot about the package that we put together, and I'm really happy with the package. I think it does great conservation. I think, given the time frame we had to operate and where we started from, which was nothing, we've done a remarkable job. I do think our next piece of work after approving the package is to really get serious about it. To identify however we decide to divide up the state and whatever ecological zone we want to do. A strategic plan for each of those zones is really looks at what are we going to try to accomplish in the remaining 24 years? What are the goals that we want to see done in 24 years that fulfill the responsibilities laid out in the Constitution so that we can then measure our success? I think what we've got today in front of us will show great success. But I think it would be even better if we knew what the long-term goal was. Where are we headed? Instead of picking what's really good from a list of things that we need to do. So I think the package is fine. I think we can be more strategic than we are next year. And I look forward to working on that strategic vision. So we really know where we're headed.
I think members just on that point last night, I did go back and listen to
the pig, our very first meeting in this room less than 4 months ago, and the comments that Dave made and others have echoed about the need for a plan were front and center then. They still are now, and as chair, and I think all of us still hold that commitment that, you know, given the time commitments and requirements for this round, I think we did a great job, but I believe everyone in this council is committed to having a thoughtful strategic plan moving forward, and we will have that time post April 1 to be able to begin that process. So it was encouraging to listen back to that tape 3.5 short months ago and listen to the comments then, and they are being echoed again today, the commitment to developing a vision of what we want Minnesota's prairies and forests and wetlands to look like a quarter of a century from now. And it's my commitment as chair to make sure that we do have that plan so that when we come with our 2011 recommendations, we'll have that as part of our process and to guide our decision. Any other comments? Wayne?
Mr. Chair, I think it's very important to recognize the fact that I don't think anybody here went out with a preconceived notion we're going to somehow leave the metro area out. I know for myself and most of the other people I've talked to, we had a system that we set up. That's why a number of them got 11 votes for approval of a project, because it had all the merits of what we were looking for in an ideal project. We have others that got 0 votes. That means nobody on this entire council voted for it because it didn't withstand the test that we put to it, either personally or as a council. So, in essence, the system we used, I think, ranked them up. If the metro area, for one reason or another, got left out, per se, it's probably because we all had a mindset of how what our job was and how we were intending to put conservation first. I don't know, unless we were to change the system, that we would probably ever get a direct metro area project in to a greater degree, because a lot of them aren't open for hunting. And in the back of a lot of our minds, I know from mine, for example, if you have a project out here that's available for hunting and another one that has habitat but isn't available, I automatically went for it to hunting. And that's why I think I had mentioned last time during that if there is no hunting in the area, that's where parks and waters may be better suited, because it fits the intent more explicitly than does the wildlife aspects. So, on that side, when I got all done, I was rather surprised. I saw where some of the bodies ended up, because I hadn't looked at the area, and they just fell together that way. And I think, instead of talking about them in the portal, all kind of did the same thing. It's just the way it happened. So, I don't believe that there was ever any intent to leave any particular area more exclusive or less inclusive.
Any further comments?
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to ask you a question based on last week's meeting. What was my primary question throughout that meeting last week? Did I once ask a question about geographical balance?
Rick, I don't know. I mean, you had a number of questions. I suspect that was part of the mix. I would have to go back and listen to the tape.
Bob, did I ask?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think your point was to hold up the conservation plan. And I think at least in the occasion, I think that that was certainly obviously by the law. I don't know if I'm assuming you're not, because I don't know.
Mr. Chair, I think my primary question was about restoration and acquisition and the mix related to restoration and acquisition. And when you look at the data that Bill has provided to us, I think it bears out what I said, is that we are very heavy on acquisition, which the council has defined as protection. But instead, the Constitution has said protection, enhancement, and restoration. And by looking at purely protection, or a great majority of protection, we do have tilt consequences, and we have ongoing management consequences. And those are my primary concerns, because we have to deal with the budget that we have and ongoing budget questions. I think restoration is a good piece, because we own a lot of land in the state of Minnesota right now. It's a tremendous public asset,
that hasn't been maintained that well, whether it's WMAs or whether it's state forests or whether it's other properties. And I think in difficult economic times, it's important to take care of what we have, particularly in the short budget timeline. That the conservative thing would be to take care of what we have and be prepared for looking at long term with a statewide strategic plan. Now, we have multiple plans that are here, but where do we go so that 25 years from now people look back and say, what did we accomplish? Did we achieve those goals that the voters gave us for responsibility? Late last week, I also sent, or had Bill send each of you the bonding obligations that DNR has had for acquisition for the last 2 years of bonding. And I have very significant questions about the capacity of achieving some of the acquisition. Because when you look at the amount of unobligated purchase that has been done over the past several bonding years, and for the fact that the Department of Natural Resources will be cut through this budget process, there will be cuts, there will be staff reductions, the capacity to put these projects in the ground will be limited. So our shovel ready focus that we had, which I think is a good focus, I think is unlikely to be met, because last year in the bonding bill we talked about shovel ready, and the Department of Natural Resources has not been able to achieve that shovel ready status. We're a year later and many of those funds are unobligated. And I don't know if all of you were able to look at that, but that's the record. And so I think it is a good package. And I voted for, in fact, proposals in here, part of the 11th meeting. I think that the RIM proposals are good. I think that having the federal government pick up the FILT obligation is a good thing when there is acquisition. But we are very heavy on acquisition versus restoration. I think at this point in time, restoration, or a greater support for restoration, would be a better choice.
And Rick, just on that point, if you recall, the one motion that I made last week was to fully fund the restoration of the wildlife management area lands. In fact, we're doing that. As I look at this package, the one dealing with perennial restoration or enhancement is that one, and that one is fully funded. That's the request that came in, and that's what we're funding. I have Darby, if you hand your hand up.
Yeah, just a quick follow-up. I was certainly one of a number of us who did front-load acquisition. And I think part of the reasoning that, you know, Rick brings up some good concerns. And part of the reason was we've got, in some cases, a limited opportunity. The time is we either move on it or we lose it forever. The other is, because of the economic downturn, land prices are really low. In fact, I talked to a county commissioner in Monroe County not too long ago, and he said, my word, people that were asking $100,000 to get rid of their project or their land, they can sell it for $10,000. I mean, and there are some instances in which that's really an opportunity. And I guess my sense was that in a strategic plan, we begin front-loaded, and this is just me talking, but they start front-loading acquisition, but as the years go by, that really fails, drops off, and the restitution and all the other activities that we can increase. You can kind of get a sliding scale that accomplishes that. And all of them, we go all that way.
What?
Yeah,
excuse me, as the senior member of the council, I might say, be patient. We're in the first 4 months of a 25-year plan. And I think we're at a bargaining point with land acquisition right now. The restoration will come. And I think we have to look at that very seriously as far as where the bargains out here, as far as acquisition versus restoration. I totally agree with Darby, that we have to put everything in perspective, and we have to have a vision, a 25-year vision. And the plans are, the piecemeal of the plans are there, and I think we all have to look at putting these together. We've got the first stud wall of the barn built. We have to have a vision of what it's going to look like in the future. we have to look at how we're going to tie these major waterways together. And this is going to be an evolutionary process that we're all going to have to study and pay attention to. But have patience. We can't get everything done the first 4 or 5 months. And I think we've made a very good step in significant progress. And let's keep on with progress.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I just want to say for the record that I just don't think it's fair to say that the Metro Conservation Corridor's proposals and the Minnesota Valley National Wildlife Refuge projects are not about conservation and good science. They are. And so I just want to be clear for the record that it's wrong to say that they're not. And I think we need to be fair.
Is there any further discussion? Members, we have a motion in front of us to adopt a spreadsheet with the recommended allocations to the specific organizations that are before you. Any further discussion on this motion? Bill said he just needs to be a recorded vote, so Bill will be asking for a roll call vote. Now, I'm calling the question. Bill?
Yes. Senator Anderson?
Yes.
Councilor Bench?
Yes.
Councilor Cox?
Yes.
Councilor Inger?
Yes.
Representative Gunther?
Yes.
Representative Hansen?
No.
Councilor Hartnell?
Yes.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Yes.
Councilor Nelson?
Yes.
Councilor Wall?
Yes.
Councilor Schroeder?
Aye.
The Chair?
Aye.
It is 11-1.
Very good. Motion has been adopted. We have our spreadsheet. Members, we are going to be coming back a week from today with a bill in front of us that incorporates this spreadsheet with these recommended appropriations. We will spend the day going through that bill. We will be talking about the Conservation Partners Program language in that bill. It is my hope that by the end of the day, a week from today, we will have made a recommendation to the legislature on our fiscal 2010 appropriations. Any further business?
Clarification, what we have to do in that bill, some work in terms of the budget, so the money actually flows out when it's needed and when it's available, and that's part of what we'll have to look at.
And as Director Davis, you can work with Bill as this week, that would be great. Yes, Bob.
Yeah, to members, provocations to provide recommendations to the legislature. We have obviously the bulk of it will be in bill form, but we're not limited to just a bill in terms of our recommendations. And I expect the chair will include a transmittal letter to the governor, the speaker, and the Senate majority here. And that might be an opportunity for us. If there are other recommendations that the council believes are of merit for the legislature to consider, that would be another vehicle to provide. Not everything we recommend necessarily has to be directly in law or in the form of a bill. So I would say that we should keep open that idea that maybe some of these other things we talked about today could be part of that content, and I hope we'll think about it.
That's a very good suggestion, and I certainly will as chair in writing that letter. Motion to adjourn. Further discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We are adjourned. Thank you.